This is Radio EcoShock.
We are on the track of climate truth tellers. Our guest is Dar Jamail, and he's one of them. Dar is a journalist and in the past a war reporter. He's the author of 3 books. Dar has been published in major newspapers in Europe and appears on TV. More recently, especially in the popular blog truthout.org, Dar Jamail publishes deeply researched articles about our climate unwinding into dangerous territory. Dar Jamail, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
What brought you from war coverage to the climate beat?
The primary reason being that it's almost goes without saying the single most important story in everyone's lives today, whether they're aware of it or not. So it was really, you know, a matter of urgency. I'd been watching these changes happening across the planet for a couple of decades before I was able to really dive fully into making this my primary area of focus with my journalism. And so when I transitioned over roughly around 2011, 2012, I felt like I had a lot of ground to make up. And so this, I really can't see this not being my primary area of focus for my journalism ever again.
Well, me too. It is the big story that's going to shape this civilization and really whether humans make it or not, in my opinion. So you penetrated into Fallujah during the 2004 siege and you reported from Iraq without military protection. How do you think your resistance to the establishment story has shaped your work on climate change?
That's a really good question, because that has been a big factor for me. It's been amazing watching mainstream reporting and even a lot of the more left-leaning media outlet reporting on climate change, because I am citing a lot of the same scientific reports, and I know that a lot of these more well-funded outlets and well-funded and well-backed journalists than I have access to the same information, and yet seeing a lot of self-censorship and a lot of watering down of the information and not giving people the straight story. And it smarts of what I experienced in Iraq of literally being on the ground, seeing things with my own eyes and then watching them reported completely differently or not reported at all by the bigger outlets back in the United States. And so seeing that same phenomena with climate change has been rather startling and almost goes without saying adds more fuel to my fire to report it as accurately and timely as possible.
Well, for me, one of the frustrations is that so often the mainstream media don't come to any conclusions at all. And so you're kind of left thinking, well, is this just natural? Or I guess is it just happening? And there's no background to it and there's no doers in it. There's no actors in it.
Well, that's a very important point. And that's also what I saw in Iraq is the whole issue of context of story is left completely out of the discussion. None of the situation, for example, if a mainstream outlet is reporting on an extreme weather event, whether it be a 100-year flood that's now happening every 5 years or a record-setting hurricane or typhoon somewhere in the world, it's not most of the time, I mean, there are a few exceptions, but most of the time it's not given in proper context of, well, this is happening because atmospheric temperatures are now more than 1°C above pre-industrial baselines, or this is happening because ocean water temperatures are setting record heat levels across the globe in many parts of the year, even including up in the Arctic and down in Antarctica. So that general context is left completely out of the picture, which is rather astounding because obviously that's the most important part of the story.
Well, let's get right to some of your recent stories, and they're big ones. For example, you wrote, "We have released a monster. Previously frozen soil is breathing out greenhouse gases." What is the monster, Dar?
Well, the monster is, and this was according to a study that was published in the prestigious journal Nature not too long ago, is simply that the monster is that soil which traditionally has absorbed a lot of the CO2 out of the atmosphere is now respirating that carbon back into the atmosphere. Because atmospheric temperatures around the globe are warming apace, the soil is literally having the carbon baked out of it. And so it's a rather disconcerting situation because it's yet another feedback loop or positive reinforcement loop or runaway feedback loop, all 3 different ways to say the same thing, of what's happening around the globe. And there's currently, some scientists estimate now more than 60 of these runaway feedback loops. And this one in particular is one of the bigger ones because the aforementioned study has showed that the soil respiration is now adding between 0.45 and 0.71 parts per million of CO2 into the atmosphere every year and will continue to do so between now and 2050. And that's assuming that current climate modeling is accurate, which the study itself says we are pretty confident in saying that these are going to be low estimates and not high enough to keep a pace with reality. So that's a significant amount of CO2 that's now being added into the atmosphere just from soil respiration.
And when I talked to the lead author of that study, Thomas Crowther, he told us this big soil feedback, it's every year as large as the emissions of the United States. It's left out of the climate models that the politicians used at the Paris climate talks. And reports by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change don't include this soil feedback either. It seems not very surprising to me now these days that the official world is ages back behind the actual science.
And you just gave a perfect example as to why. It makes no logical sense whatsoever that a feedback as massive and as important as this one, for example, would be left out of the climate models. That just makes no sense whatsoever. And so this is why the worst-case scenario, according to the most recent Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change modeling, shows maybe maximum of 5C temperature increase across the globe by 2100, which is really rather absurd when we look at it through this lens. And that's why some scientists are talking by as much as a 12C increase by 2100. And while that sounds absolutely shocking, and it is absolutely shocking, when we start factoring in a lot of these runaway feedback loops and a lot of these other studies like this that are not currently being factored into the models, then those start to look a lot more accurate than these rather lowball figures being produced by the IPCC.
I personally doubt that human beings could survive a 12 degrees C rise in less than a century, but we'll bypass that for now. I want to talk about another article you did in December in truthout.org. You said the Arctic is unraveling. Now, I know that's a big story. We could talk for an hour just on that, but please do tell us what you mean.
Well, in that quote, the Arctic is unraveling is not mine. I should point it out that it comes from a report called the 2016 Arctic Report Card produced by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration here in the U.S. And so that was one of the report's authors who concluded stating that the Arctic is unraveling and made such a profound statement because temperatures in the Arctic are, as they always have been and will, really increasing far more dramatically and quickly than around the rest of the planet. And so the report went on to show that, for example, temperatures in December at times, and granted, you know, being in the northern hemisphere as you and I are, most of the listeners are going to understand that December, this is the throes of winter. I mean, December 21st is winter solstice. It's the single darkest day on the planet in the northern hemisphere. And so obviously we're several months into winter in the Arctic, and you would expect some of the harshest temperatures of the year up there. And instead, there were some days in December where we literally had melting on the North Pole in the Arctic, and then other heat waves that had blown through up there that were increased the temperatures even approaching melting by January 1st, which is just really stunning. I mean, we're talking about temperatures that were 30 and even 40 degrees higher than normal. And that's why it's kind of leaving scientists shaking their heads in disbelief about what's happening up there. And so this is causing permafrost and other areas up there to be releasing more methane than ever. Many areas, even from January to March, so the first part of the year, seeing temperature records as high as 8 degrees C above prior high records. I mean, really just stunning, and I know that you understand this, but I think people need to really understand how shockingly high that is. And then, of course, this bleeds into the ocean temperatures up there, where even more recent reports are talking about how the entire ecology of the Arctic now is shifting, where a lot of species aren't going to be able to survive. Some are migrating out, new species, invasive species now moving in. So literally the entire ecosystem up there is being changed simply by the dramatically increasing air and water temperatures.
Well, related to the unraveling Arctic, but not limited to the Arctic, you also found 2016 was the year of shrinking ice. On Radio EcoShock, Canadian scientist Paul Beckwith mentioned this, but we do need to hear more about it to grasp the enormity of it. Dar, talk to us about what you found.
Yes, this was also a story I did based on analysis provided by the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado, which showed that both Antarctica and the Arctic were seeing record new low levels of sea ice extent, both on a daily basis and monthly basis throughout much of 2016. And so that report stated that for the entire year of 2016, sea ice extent, both in the Arctic and Antarctica, was at levels well below what they consider normal. And if we simply look at what that means, all of the record lows and even the top three record lows are all in recent time frame. And so, for example, in the Arctic, we saw an extent period where it was 193,000 square miles below any previous year on record. And that's just from the period of 2016, from the middle of May through early June. The report goes on to outline a lot of other rather shocking statistics, particularly about how much lower the sea ice extent even in the Antarctic is, and other things happening down there, such as a 300-foot wide rift running right along the Larsen C ice shelf that was photographed by NASA, so showing that a giant chunk of that ice shelf is very much on the brink of breaking off. And that's going to release an iceberg the size of Delaware into the Southern Ocean. So it's, you know, really, really startling developments that we're seeing unfolding. So it's that's yet another analysis coming out that's showing that in these areas of the planet, the Arctic and the Antarctic, which are literally the refrigerators of the planet or the air conditioners of the planet, particularly in Antarctica, that we're seeing record-setting melting happening.
Well, we're talking about huge physical signs of abrupt warming that can be seen from space, and in the face of this evidence, the incoming regime of Donald Trump will pump out even more greenhouse gases while denying there is a problem. I can't believe this is all Donald Trump. He's not some superhero. Who are some of the people and forces behind this fossil fuel takeover of the American government?
Well, it's literally the fossil fuel industry, other corporate entities like the Koch brothers. You know, those would be the two leading entities that I would point my finger at. And all you have to do is look at who he's brought in as Scott Pruitt to head the EPA, people like Rick Perry in charge of the Department of Energy. He's literally bringing in the jackals of the fossil fuel industry. Yeah, Trump is sort of a more extreme histrionic version of Bush. He's simply the puppet who's very, very effectively distracting much of the media away from the machinery that has been brought in to really carry out the wishes of the fossil fuel industry. And so this is why when you look at his cabinet and you look at other people like Steve Bannon, he's brought in, who's now on the National Security Council, these are the people who are literally running the show. I don't really feel like Trump is an individual who could effectively think his way out of a paper bag. This is not an intelligent individual. He really doesn't know what he's doing. He's clearly got major psychological issues. And so I don't think that left to his own devices, he could really effectively pull off what we're seeing happening with this lunge towards totalitarianism with the U.S. government. And it's from an environmental perspective, looking, he's literally appointing people who have been the single most effective, what's the word for them, patsies, or people basically doing the bidding of the fossil fuel industry in charge of these agencies like the EPA that are supposed to be taking, you know, overseeing policies that take care of the environment and enforce regulations, and they're instead being completely shut down or disassembled before our very eyes.
Yeah, there's been some think tanks like the Heritage Institute or the Competitive Enterprise Institute who are totally funded by the multi-billionaires like the Koch brothers, who've been planning this for years. And so now they're just bringing their big plans into action. TV personality Bill Maher says that maybe our only hope to limit Donald Trump could be the Republicans in Congress. Dar Jamil, are we that desperate?
I think we're beyond that desperate at this point. I think realistically now, looking at the political landscape of this country, Trump's about to appoint yet another arch conservative to the Supreme Court, and we look at the impetus of the Democratic Party. Most of his nominees are just sailing through the nomination process. I see nothing but darkness when I look at the future of the United States, and then certainly what this means now when we look at the global climate. They're going to pull out of the Paris climate deal, which was non-binding, a bit of a joke. I've been extremely critical of that from the beginning, but even any pretense that this country was going to even pretend as though it was going to do a little bit to mitigate its CO2 emissions, not only is that now completely gone, but it's stomping off the accelerator. Let's put it in the fifth gear. Let's drill. Let's go ahead and push through the pipeline at Standing Rock. Let's get Keystone XL back on the table. It's full steam ahead now off the cliff as we really go off into the climate precipice.
Yeah, what about Standing Rock? I mean, what is that about, for, in case there's anybody left in the universe who doesn't know? And do you think that the protests there will just be crushed by brute force and maybe the Army will build the rest of it?
It's happening as we speak, actually. This just came out yesterday that, you know, when Trump signed yet that other executive order pushing through that and the Keystone XL pipeline, said, no, let's go ahead and move through. That overturns the Army Corps of Engineers' recent decision to not grant the environmental impact statement and say that more work is going to need to be done and we're not going to approve of this. So that's now gone. And so literally we're seeing that push through brutal suppression of the water protectors and other peaceful demonstrators out there trying to block what's happening, who are, they're literally just trying to safeguard their drinking water source. That's essentially the drinking water source for well over a million people. And so we have very draconian measures being taken. And I recently interviewed Jeff Haas, who's a member of the Standing Rock Legal Collective, talking about the extreme measures that have been going on for months out there, and I think we're going to see increase things like the use of concussion grenades, rampant use of tear gas, rubber bullets, bean bags, things like this, and horrible things. So many people who followed this story are aware that there was an American woman who, a protester, who was shot in the arm with some kind of exploding device from the police, and she nearly lost her arm completely. It's still hanging in the balance, quite literally. Maybe after 10 more surgeries, she'll recover use of that arm. But then what happened was police authorities went into the hospital where she had her surgeries and obtained her clothing and pieces of fragments of that explosive device that were pulled out of her body and are running tests on them to try to show that the explosive was either set by that woman herself or other water protectors. And so using old FBI tactics that were used during the 60s against activists, trying to sort of blame the victim. And so law enforcement, it's a situation where it couldn't be more clear that law enforcement in the U.S., both on a local, state, and federal level, are literally being simply doing the bidding of the pipeline companies and going out and viciously attacking water protectors, demonizing them. There's now a big push across the country to demonize any sort of protest. There's actually a law that GOP lawmakers in North Dakota are trying to pass that if someone is on a public roadway and they, quote unquote, are accidentally run over, then that person, the person driving the vehicle would not be subject to charges. And so literally making it legal to run over protesters. So that's what's happening in this country now. And Jeff Haas, when I spoke with him, he concluded our interview by basically saying, I really fear that law enforcement will feel that they have a free hand to use excessive and possibly lethal force now on water protectors. And I think that it's only a matter of time before we see deaths of people in the field who are, whether they're a water protector at Standing Rock or some other demonstrator around the United States. I think that's exactly where this country is going right now.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is journalist, author, and counterculture activist Dar Jamail. Well, I have to ask it, has America just suffered a coup?
I think that my opinion is yes. I think that this country is going headlong into totalitarianism. You simply look at the placement of Steve Bannon, the dramatic consolidation of power that's happening, and who now literally is running the country. And these people have the White House, they have the Senate, they have Congress, and they're about to have the Supreme Court as soon as this next nomination goes through, which the way things are going, there's no reason to think that it won't. So the short answer is yes. And I feel that this country is going into extremely dark times. And of course, given the economic and military power of this country, that's going to send shockwaves around the globe. And I think, this country getting actively, overtly and actively involved in major wars is on the horizon. And those wars they've already started against its own people here in the U.S. Protests are happening dramatically. There is a huge wave of resistance sweeping the country against essentially everything that this administration is trying to do. And that's heartening and exciting and hopeful. But I think it's only a matter of time before we see a draconian repression of that. And it's becoming illegalized as we speak. And then I think the real question is, after that brutal suppression, then what happens? And I think that will be a key moment in the history of this country and which direction it goes.
Well, rounding back to climate, all this frenetic activity out of Washington has put me and my reporting in a bit of a bind, and I could just give you a quick example. You wrote about how an essential ocean current in the Atlantic could collapse within 300 years. And part of me says, well, I can't think of anything that matters beyond 300 days in this environment. What was that article about, and do you think the long game still really matters?
Well, I did this article because this is such a groundbreaking study that came out in yet another prestigious journal called Science Advances, and the title of the study was Overlooked Possibility of a Collapsed Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, AMOC, in Warming Climate, which basically shows that this study, what they did is they corrected for previous biases in climate models and showed that when global atmospheric CO2 concentration doubles from a 1990 level, the AMOC will collapse within 300 years. And as if to underscore that, global atmospheric CO2 concentration in 1990 was 354 parts per million. Right now it's 404 and climbing parts per million. So we are watching this doubling happening before our very eyes, and again on a human, not geologic time scale. So this is happening very, very quickly. And so once that doubling occurs, according to this study, the AMOC shuts down within 300 years. And the study admits to being conservative, and it would probably happen well in advance of that. And so once this ocean current shuts down, a whole lot of things happen across the planet. But for us in North America and Northern Europe and Western Europe, what this means is we start going back into ice age, dramatic weather pattern shifting, as well as a dramatic increase. This then becomes another major contributor to sea level rise, particularly along the eastern coast of North America, from Florida all the way well up into Canada, dramatic sea level rise as well. So this is massive. I mean, there was a very over-dramatized, rather horrible movie that came out quite a few years ago called The Day After Tomorrow, basically about this very thing happening. And it's pretty amazing to see that this is now making its way into major prestigious scientific peer-reviewed journals, that it is happening. It's not going to happen overnight as it did in the movie, but still, on looking at a 300-year time scale, it's extremely abrupt, looking through a geologic lens at this. And then, does the long game matter? That's a very good question. I'm not sure that I can answer that, but I think if we look at the fact that humans have never lived on a planet at 3.5 C above pre-industrial temperature baseline levels, and we're already over 1 C, and there are some scientists saying we could even see 6 and 8C increase by 2050, we're talking 33 years from now. We're talking within our lifetime. So we do start to look at the possibility of, you know, how long do humans last on the planet with runaway climate change? And then again, you know, go back 5 minutes earlier in the conversation, amidst the political context where this country, one of the, you know, in the top three leading CO2 producers on the planet, is just stomping on the pedal now like never before, it does start to look quite grim.
You know, I first read your work in The Guardian in the UK, and of course I did read Beyond the Green Zone, your original book about Iraq, and you've been published in Le Monde in France. You've reported for Democracy Now. You've been on many TV networks. More lately, you've been publishing in Truth Out. What is truthout.org?
Truthout.org is an independent, left-leaning, internet-based news outlet. We are based here in the U.S. We're 100% internet-based. We are, I would argue confidently, the single most independent news outlet in the United States. We are 90% funded from our readers alone, and then the other 10% grants that we get to support our work are vetted in that we do not take any monies from anyone that tries to have any sway over our editorial policy. So I am literally in a privileged position of being able to report on what I want to report on and how I want to report on it. And I think we, as an outlet, really walk our talk and do an extremely fine job of covering everything from climate change to what's happening politically in the U.S., and then we have a lot of outside contributors as well. So that is what Truth Out is. People can subscribe to the newsletter. It is free. And especially now with what's happening in this country, we are absolutely committed to taking our reporting to an even higher level and monitoring these centers of power that have just taken over this country.
Well, as we finish up for this time, is there any other topic that you'd like to alert our listeners to?
Well, I think what we've covered, both as far as the crisis of what's happening to global climate and how fast it's happening, coupled with what's happening in this country, I think people are already keeping their eye, certainly the listeners to this show, on both of those things. But I think, you know, just to kind of underscore again what I talked about with what's happening in the United States, I think people need to pay very, very close attention to what's happening here. And I'm recommending everyone read The Origins of Totalitarianism by Hannah Arendt. I think that is even more pertinent right now than reading 1984. So I think that that's what the kind of the lens that people should be looking at what's happening in the United States through at this moment in history.
Please give us a website where readers can find you and your work.
I republish all my articles on my own website that I use as an archive, and it's darjamail.net. That's darjamail.net.
I'll put links to everything we've talked about and your three books in my show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Dar Jamail, I'm glad we finally connected.
Me as well, Alex. Thanks so much.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.